Yeah, my name's Liston. I'm alcoholic. And our speaker tonight, Gary, I met Gary a little over a year ago, I guess, and we became real good friends. We ride motorcycles together and everything. We just got back from going up riding the Dragon, spent about 3 days up there in the rain riding our bikes. And you know, you've heard of alcoholics come out of a bar and couldn't find a car. He lost a damn train. Now, how you lose a train, I don't know, because the tracks are right there. You know, you ought to be able to track a train down. It can, but and how you wreck a damn train, I don't understand. He's wrecked four trains, you know. And but, you know, in Bill Wilson's story, Bill Wilson seen a bright light. Gary seen a burning couch. He was in a fire that almost killed him, killed his sister, and almost killed him. It burned his leg plumb in two nearly. They said he'd never walk again. And from that day on, he's not had a drink. So that's one hell of a spiritual awakening. He spent 3 months in a burn unit, and he's just a real kind-hearted person when you get to know him. He's a little bit hard to get to know because he's obnoxious as hell when you first meet him. And you get all that bullshit aside, you know, it's just like a, you know, it's like a beauty just skin deep. You know, if we skinned him, he'd look all right, you know. The damn fire just about done that to him anyway. But he's a real miracle, and he has actually learned how to apologize to people and stuff like that, you know, without getting too damn mad. But he still get real mad. He'll show you now. He gets so damn mad at you, he'll show you. And then he gets over it. So, you know, he's like the rest of us. He ain't cured yet. You know, I don't ever want to be cured. Cured people's either dead or drunk. And I'd love to be dead or drunk. But come on up here, Gary, and share your experience, strength, and hope.
I'm Gary Eubanks. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a real slow learner. I've been in six treatment centers, and I grew up in a alcoholic family. My dad was an alcoholic. My mother died from alcoholism when I was 15. She was 41. My little brother is 44. Died 5 years ago from alcoholism. He didn't know how to live outside of prison. And when he got out, they told him that if he drank again, he's going to die, and he died. He was bleeding from the esophagus. My sister, I've been through six treatment centers. The railroad put me through treatment six times. I've had seven train wrecks. I've actually had more. But if you're an engineer, you're going to wreck a train. You guys don't hear about it because you're not on the railroad. But anybody that works for LNN knows about some of my train wrecks. And Scott Lee was at my first AA meeting in 1985. It's where John B. started the back room group. And so my EAP at the time was Ken Sweeney. He took me to my first meeting. So after every train wreck I had, the next week, I'm in treatment. But now, I wasn't using when I wrecked the train. I had the behavior before and afterwards. But if I'd been using, I would never get my job back. The railroad, it's weird. It's the only place I've ever been that you have to have job protection insurance before you actually go to work, because they know you're going to get fired. So, like in Nashville, there's a 15-mile-an-hour speed limit, some up to 25. If a railroad cop or you get caught speeding or a train master catch you going 1 mile over the speed limit, they fire the whole crew. When I was a kid, I'm going to tell you about my last train wreck, and I might tell you about something in between those two. My last train wreck, I totaled two engines. My last train wreck was down at Union Station. When I was a kid, I was claustrophobic, and you know, when I we when I was growing up, the only place to go shopping on the weekends was downtown. So we'd go downtown, and I'd get in the Life and Casualty building, get on the elevator, go to the 7th floor and buy these potato chips I liked. But I knew, I was scared to death on the elevator, that if the cable broke, I'm going to start jumping in the air. Because if I'm in the air when it hits, I'll be all right. And that's true. It worked with my last train wreck. You can't see, Montegal's 5% grade. Down at Union Station, right up under Union Station, if you look up the hill, you can't tell it's a hill, but it's 3% grade. It's a big hill. So at 3 a.m. in the morning, they wanted me to take some engines out of 100 track and put them on another train going to Memphis that needed more power. So I left. I thought I was leaving two engines, and every car or engine is operated by air brakes. So I drew the brakes down and put two cross ties under the wheel. It was four engines, so that's a lot heavier. And then I pulled down at the bottom of the hill with my two engines, and the yard master says, "Eubanks, those engines are following you out of the track." And I could see them, and they were doing this. They were rocking. And I saw them when they hit, so I jumped in the air. So I was in the air when they hit. Now, it banged me up pretty bad, but I didn't have to go. I went for a drug screen, but I didn't have to go for, any medical. It didn't kill me. It would have killed me if I had jumped in the air. The railroad's got more money than it knows what to do with, and it leases the engines. So that's a lot of money. So my last train wreck in 91, they didn't ask me to come back. They did appoint a mediator, though. The government appointed a mediator. my first train wreck was in, right before I became an engineer, I was on the road. And we come in Murfreesboro, they got five crossings up there with no gates. It's real dangerous. And we were coming back from Chattanooga with a 100 car length train. And the engineer had just gotten back from being fired for a year because he went by a red board. And I didn't know this, but at that time in 77, if he'd gotten off the engine after this wreck we had, it would have gone on his automobile license instead of, I've still got my FRA engineer's license in my pocket, so I'm still qualified to run an engine. I mean, you probably don't want me to, but I mean, but honestly, guys, if you know anybody that's worked for the railroad, it's real easy to wreck a train. the grass speeds it up. If you're switching out a warehouse and you get on grass, it speeds it up, but you can't stop. It's a real scary feeling. The rail spreads. There's a lot of different ways to wreck them. But we were coming back. It was raining, and this kid named David Heath, he was 22 years old, tried to beat us at the crossing. And we were going 40 miles an hour, 100 car length train. And he hit on my side. And all it did was bent a step and cut two hoses. Well, the sparks were flying all the way up. They can hear me anyway. The sparks were flying up above me, and I'm scared to death. And we drug him a quarter of a mile. And what he'd been drinking, he's drunk, he's trying to beat us. It was obvious. But the state trooper, what knocked him out from under our wheel was a switch stand, the steel switch stand. And the engineer wouldn't get off the engine. So I had to go back and check on this kid. I knew he was dead, but he was dead. And it's like 1 a.m. in the morning, and I've got a real nervous stomach. And so I'm on the news, and my stomach, I look like my stomach's really bad. So I came in the yard and became an engineer in the yard so I wouldn't have to run on the road. That scared me really bad. But if the engineer had gotten off the engine when the state trooper asked for it, his license, it would have went on his automobile insurance. A couple of years later, they changed that. Now, and the state trooper could not get on the engine because it's private property. So after that, I became an engineer. I'd been working for about maybe 3 months and run into a rear end of a train white light is the worst. Anything that happens on a white light, if you go by a white light, anything that happens, it's your fault. So I've got 8 engines, and I'm real tired. I've been working 11 and a half hours, and I didn't know that the lead engine that I was on was being shocked because the brakes had been welded. So I'm going in, I've got 8 engines, and they're real heavy, and I'm going around a curve right there at Harding Place. And there's never a train stopped on the E-line. I got a lot of nicknames at the railroad too, and that's one of them, E-line. But I hit the caboose, and it hurt the conductor, and it derailed the cars, and I was off for 3 months. And my daughter was born. You know, I was off playing golf, and I was getting paid while I was off. The union back then was really strong. No matter what happens, usually they get you back. I've cut a train in two. You know, when engines are being shopped, they have to be load tested on a straight track. And you put it out number 8, that's as fast as you can go with the brakes on. There's the electrician and a pipe fitter on the engine with you, okay? So I'm going, I've got it at number 8, I'm load testing it, and I take off. And somebody pulled a train in front of me at the end of the track, and I couldn't stop, so I cut it in half. That was scary. I lost a train. At 20 minutes, at the railroad, when you eat lunch, it's called 20 minutes. And we had pulled, there's A yard, a B yard, and a C yard. So the A yards where they come, when they come in, they cut them off. Then there's 56 tracks in the B yard where they divide them to go to the different places. So it was like 3 in the morning again. And I left, we went up, did 20 minutes, I put the brakes on the engine, went in to eat lunch, and I come out and the train was gone. and they would have fired all of us. There wouldn't have been no getting back. So I'm running, I run about 4 football lengths, because I knew the last track we came out of was 15. There's 5 throats, and that's where it was. If it had gone out and fouled any of the tracks at the other end, that would have been it. But it didn't. So anyway, I got found the train, brought it back. Another thing, if you know me, you know this is just natural shit that I do. When I used to smoke, and I tried to quit smoking forever, but I read Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, and the way he describes smoking a pipe, it helped me quit smoking. And one day I'm pulling the train over, and I've got about 3 more doubles to make, and I'm tapping I've only been there 2 hours, so I got at least another 7 hours to go, and I'm tapping my pipe out, and I drop it. So, me being a good alcoholic, I'm getting my damn pipe. So I start backing up, and they start screaming. They're screaming, I back up probably a quarter of a mile. And they're hollering, Eubanks, Eubanks. And I'm running. Okay, I've got the brakes on, I'm running, because I know where it's at. And I see it, I'm running on the slag, and I get my pipe. But I wasn't going to be without my pipe. Just kind of like we're all with our alcohol and drugs, you know, same way, same deal. Okay, so that's enough about my train wrecks. I haven't had an accident in almost 18 years. And I've had insurance and I had a driver's license for 16 years. I didn't realize that having a license was a privilege until they took my license away. So I got real lucky in 87 and got in with a group of people that were going to meetings together, and they all come out of treatment, and I got heavily involved in another fellowship. After I left the railroad, I had to find a real job, and I got a job at Home Depot, and I was clean for 7 years. And I was also at that time taking meetings to jails. You know, I've been in treatment 6 times, so I know that for me, I got to be right in the middle of the program. I can't be on the get to the meeting late and then leave early. Because that's, I used to do that. I can't do that and stay sober, not me. And my sponsor said, Gary, you're so sick. You know, you're an alcoholic. You're going to need a program too. So he took me through the steps. And this time around, I've never been without a sponsor. So I'll have 18 years October 13th. And I've had two sponsors with less sobriety than me, because it doesn't matter to me how much sobriety they have. What matters is that they have a sponsor that's taking them through the steps. Because I know that's where the changes happen for me. And you'll see, I mean, I'm not a very nice alcoholic. I grew up real rough. I never got in trouble for fighting, never. I rode in the ambulance with my mother 3 times. My dad beat her up. You know, that's just how I grew up. They would close the bars down. There's other stuff that I don't want to tell you about, but it was real rough. So I was, you know, it wasn't okay to cry. Now I'm a crier, but it wasn't okay to cry. And we all boxed. We had to box. I got 3 brothers, and counting me, we all boxed with golden gloves. I boxed for 7 years. Had to. I don't particularly like getting hit in the face, but I, you know, I had to, and I had an image to keep up for my brothers. When my mother died, I was going to quit school. I was 15. And so they shipped me off to Memphis, and I did a lot of fighting down there, street fighting. I didn't care about anything. And when you can handle yourself with your fist real good, people will shoot you, stab you. I've been shot once, stabbed twice. You know, I really try not to fight anymore. And you'll see. So I had 7 years in the program, active in the program, with a sponsor. Got a job at Home Depot. Became a manager at Home Depot at Antioch. After 7 years, I started using. And there's 1,000 different reasons why I started using. But basically, I quit calling my sponsor, and I quit going to meetings. So I beat another manager up at work, on the floor, in front of customers. Lowe's was trying to recruit me out in Madison, and they knew about the fight. They didn't care, so they hired me. Now, and I had 7 years, okay, so for 4 years, I'm trying to stay sober, and I cannot stay sober. I'm going to meetings. I'm using on the way home. I'm coming to the meeting late, leaving early, and I don't understand why I can't quit. So they hired me at Lowe's, and after 2.5 months, I beat the plumbing manager up at work in front of customers. And I was 150 pounds at that time. I looked like somebody from a concentration camp. I got pictures in the car. It's unreal. At that time, I was living in a car, and I also shot somebody out in North Nashville. It's, you know, when we're using, we do stuff like that. And the cops were watching me, and so I spent some time in jail for that, and actually got out of it. I've had a couple of assault and batteries, one attempt to kill, but they were all when I'm using. You know, I ain't gotten a fight in a long time. Not since I've been, only one time since I've been sober. And it was at the Y, and the guy that hit me, and I beat him up in the locker room, he had to go to jail. But that's the only time I've been in a fight since I've been in 18 years. There wasn't anything I could do about that. The guy was off his meds, and it was wild. At the time, well, this is how I function, okay? This is just giving out. I got arrested for grand larceny once. During this 4-year period, I had a car, a green car, that I was paying like $50 a month for it. And I'd gotten a ticket the week before because the front windshield was busted so bad that it was reckless driving because you couldn't see out of it. So I go to Nipper's Corner to watch Star Wars because they said it was new. Well, it wasn't new. It's just some Technicolor stuff, so I got a rain check. So I leave, and then I come back at 8 and watch a double feature. But when I came out, I went to where I parked at 6. And there was a brand new green car. And my key wouldn't work. So I busted the window. And in my car, where I parked at 6, is around back. But, you know, I at the time, honestly, guys, I didn't even know I was high. I mean, that's just how it functioned. So my key didn't work, and I'd seen them hotwire cars on TV. So I popped the hood, and I go out and start stripping the wires. At Nipper's Corner at 12 o'clock at night, and the cop pulls up, wants to know what I'm doing. Well, I'm trying to start my car. Hell, I don't even know how to hotwire a car, but I saw do it on TV, so I need to get out of there. Anyway, I got arrested for grand larceny. Brand new green car. And the one I'm driving is like a 60-something. But I don't know the difference. But that's how I function. I went to the hospital once during this time. I hurt my shoulder. I went out to Southern Hills, and this is a real pretty doctor. Beautiful doctor. Comes in the room with the... she sees me, then she walks out of the room. Then a few minutes later, a cop comes in the room, stands in the corner. And I'm thinking, what's he doing in here? I hurt my shoulder. So she comes in there with a bottle of charcoal, carton of charcoal. She says, you need to drink this. And I said, what is it? Charcoal. I'm not drinking that. She said, yeah, you are. You have OD'd. I didn't even know it was high. So my sister was on a mental disability, so she had a lot of pills. And I always had whiskey and her pills. So I play the doctors whenever. So, I mean, I use everything. And it talks about it in the big book, too. You know, there's other, most of us don't get here by just alcohol. So I'm staying with my sister in a one-bedroom apartment at Apollo Apartments. I'd just gotten fired from Lowe's, and I'm living in a car. She said I'd come stay with her. So my sister would fall asleep and burn her clothes a lot. And that night, I got a job at Food Lion across the street from Apollo Apartments, and after 2.5 weeks, I beat the produce manager up at work. Lost my job. I was high. Went home that night, had blood all in my clothes, and, you know, I'm in bad shape. But I'm not hurt. It's just blood. But she gets up and goes in the bedroom, and I passed out on the couch. And an hour and a half later, I woke up on fire. You know, there was nothing in the way from here to that door. Nothing. And I knew where the door was. But when a fire comes, guys, you can practice climbing out the windows and going to the door. But a fire takes on a life of itself. I remember every single thing about that night. Everything. And I think that that's helped me stay sober more than anything. Other than, I've never been without a sponsor. I read the big book. I read 2 pages a day, so I'm always in the book. And I'm always learning something different that wasn't there the last time I read it. I can do it 4 times a year. When I get to 164, I start over. So I'm always in the book. It's not like I feel guilty like I used to and would read 10 pages and not retain nothing. So, I mean, I have to be actively involved in my program. So I've got a sponsor. I go to meetings regularly. I talk to other alcoholics. And Scott was great. He was a great sponsor. And I'm a guy that handles things with my fist. And my ex-wife, who is HIV positive because of when I left her, she married a guy who gave her AIDS. And, so it's been really tough on my daughter. But I was living with them. And when the railroad took up money in 97, and I left in 91, but I still had a lot of friends out there. They took up money, and then when the money ran out, I had no place to live. And my ex-wife was putting the you know, the money was gone. She was putting her foot down on stuff that was really not, you know, not really cool. So I got a job. I went over to a halfway house in Green Hills. And a friend of mine in recovery told me about this job. So I got the job. And I get a job in a halfway house in Green Hills with 9 guys that want the job. 9 hard ankles that want the job in early recovery. And I never been in a halfway house. And I get the job. So I got 9 attitudes. And I'm a guy who handles things with my fist. And the first time the guy got in my face and I didn't hit him, I went back to my room, called my sponsor. My sponsor had me say a prayer for him. There's a prayer on 552 that works wonders. It's amazing. It's a prayer that says if you don't believe it, do it anyway. I went back 20 minutes later, a different person. It changed the whole situation. Me and the guy are friends today. Now, I'm not a very good morning person, so I have kicked a lot of guys out of the house in the morning when they bring me heavy stuff, you know. But everybody that I see, I take meetings out to the jail. Everybody that I see out there that I've kicked out, you know, and it, quite a few of them were not good. But I don't play with that stuff. They get out of the house right then. They don't stay overnight. They leave right then, and I put them off the property. I've never had one guy not treat me as a friend. And I see a lot of them at the jail. I see them in meetings all over town. So this time around, if you come to my home group, which is the background group, and I haven't seen you before, I'm going to meet you. I'm going to make you feel welcome. I think that we need to make it as easy as possible for people that go out and use to come back. And whatever that takes. I mean, I'm talking about like when Kevin came here tonight. Some people came up to Kevin and introduced himself. That's what we should do. I remember I took Kevin out to the jail with me last night and got him pre-approved to go in the jail, and then he couldn't go in. It didn't bother him. It bothered the crap out of me. And I let them know that out there, too. I've been doing that for, 17 years, taking meetings to the jails. I've kind of become the jail guy. Whenever somebody comes out of town, Scott and all the other people will get me to take him into a meeting because we have a great relationship with the people in Davidson County, where a lot of other counties don't have that, but we do. So it's really, it used to, you know, other than like last night and a couple of other times, it's been a little bit easier. Like Charlie and Liston do the jail, the prison meeting. In order to get in there, you got to know the chaplain. It's a little bit more difficult to get in to the prison. But anyway, so I take meetings to jails. I sponsor, I've got about maybe 7 or 8 guys I sponsor, and I'll sponsor about half of them. Now, if they don't call me in a week or so, I'll give them a sponsor call. And I'll say, so, how's it going? You sponsoring yourself? And they'll call me back laughing because they know I'm right. I call my sponsor 3 times, maybe 4 times a week. And I'd gotten out of that. I was real good at that with Scott. Scott would help me keep my job and my recovery separate because you're not your job. And I used to get confused because I got 9 guys there that I like, and I want them to like me. And people that say that, you know, I don't care what so-and-so thinks about you. Well, I do care. I want those guys to like me. I want you to like me. If you don't like me, it bothers me. I care about that shit. So, job, I would be on the phone with Scott 2 or 3 times a week, and we'd go through this whole thing. And everything that I did, my integrity, which, by the way, I didn't know anything about integrity before I got this job as a halfway house manager. And I'm still doing that today. I'm the general manager for Samaritan. I've got a lot of you guys have come out and spoke for me at Samaritan. I really appreciate that. And they appreciate it. But I'm not my job. And you know, you get people that work in the field of recovery, and it's real easy to get burned out. So I was doing 4 meetings a month at the jail. And I stopped doing that so I wouldn't get burned out. I do one or two a month. I keep my job and my recovery separate. It has nothing to do with it. I manage the apartments over there, their recovery apartments. There's 24 beds. I get to be a part of their recovery. That's a blessing. You know, I would say people think running a halfway house is a real negative thing, but it's not. There's only 5% of that that's negative. The other 95% is positive. It's like when I come to a meeting, guys, I get to be a part of your recovery. That makes my recovery stronger. And by doing what I do for a living, it makes my recovery stronger. And I have learned so much about integrity in the rooms. I'll come in here, and I'll watch you and hear you talk about something that you've done that I haven't done yet. And then I'll use that 3 weeks later. You know, that's pretty cool. And also, I know that whenever I go out of town, I can go to anywhere. When I go out of town, because I ain't been on vacation in a while, but we go to Florida a lot. And so whenever I go out of town, first thing I do is find a group and start. And I'm at meetings a lot. So I still go to probably 5 meetings a week, maybe 4. My home group is the backroom group. There's 100, and on Saturday there's probably anywhere between 80 to 100. On Sundays, 150. You need to get there early on Sunday if you want a seat. But if you're a lady and you come to my home group and you don't have a sponsor, I'm going to find you a lady sponsor. I think it's really important that the women stick with the women and the guys stick with the guys. I've seen that kill people. So, and if I'm sponsoring you and you're hitting on newcomers, you find another sponsor. 13-step is not okay. My wife, this last 2 years has been kind of rough on me. My wife started drinking. I met her in AA. And so I left. And, I haven't been on a date in a long time, so I start scrolling through my phone. I'm the kind of guy, when I got here in 97, there's 10 guys in a room. I guarantee you I've got a problem with 10 guys. That's how I was. That's who I was. And that's not a good place to be. And I had to learn how to walk. It took me probably 3 years to walk with a cane. So I don't have a way to meetings. So I've got 10 guys in the room that I don't like. But I need a ride to a meeting. So I'll ask David to give me a ride to a meeting. Even though I don't like him. He comes and he picks me up. He's doing some 12-step work. He's trying to give it away. Before we even get to the meeting, we're friends. Everything that I thought I knew about David was wrong. I got probably 15 guys today that are in my life. If I hadn't asked him for a ride to a meeting, not only I don't think I'd be sober, I was a real angry guy. And by the way, that's the only emotion that I can readily identify. Even with 18 years, anger is the only one. Liston's one of my heroes, by the way. I do get mad easy. I don't fight like I used to, and I'm pretty good at saying I'm wrong. But I do. I still get kind of wound up about stuff, you know. I wish I wasn't like that, but I don't think there's no way to get that out of there. I used to think that. my perspective changed on the fighting deal to. Now it's the first person to throw the punch is the first guy to run out of ideas. And that's a big change. And so I started looking through my phone, back to my phone deal. I started looking through my phone, and it's full of phone numbers, but there are no women. Nothing but guys. I go to this men's retreat, and they con me into it. How much time do I have? They conned me into going to my first Usual Suspects retreat. There's 170 guys, no TV, no cell phone, nothing. I thought, what? Why would I want to do that? They come and say, well, we need somebody to get the food. Will you come and do that? And you can go on scholarship. So I said, okay. And I realized about 15 years ago, because I don't miss that for nothing. I go to 2 retreats a year. But I realized about 15 years ago, there's 170 guys in the room, and I don't have a problem with one guy. That's never happened for me. Never. The reason I went back to school is because my older brother, who was in Vietnam at the time, graduated from Glencliff, Mr. Glencliff and Muskin Jr. He taught me into going back to school, and I got both of those superlatives from the same school that he did. That was cool. Yeah. So I was a congenial redneck is what I was. And some of you guys are congenial rednecks. So anyway, I haven't been in a fight. I pulled a guy out of a car in Hickory Hollow at Christmas time. My daughter was with me, 7 years old. I pulled him out of the car and beat him up in front of his wife at Christmas time. That's who I am when I'm using it. I haven't been in a fight in a long time, guys. Only one, and it wasn't my fault. I was just defending myself. If you're at the Y and getting a fight in the Y, you're both gone. But they didn't ask me to leave. And I didn't know the guy was off his meds, but he was there was something wrong with him. So anyway, I sponsor guys. I try to make new people feel welcome. And I still, the burns are real ugly. This is, if you don't want to look, don't look, but this is what happened the last time I used. So it burned from here to here all the way to the bone. So I was in the burn unit for 3.5 months. And right off the bat, so every 3 days I'm getting surgery, skin grafts, and they're putting me in a tub, they're scrubbing this dead skin off of you. You have to do that every day. So I remember everything about the burn unit. As a matter of fact, when I got out, people would give me canes, and I would, I'd carve something on them, and then I'd show them, and it hurt their feelings. So I started making my own and making walking sticks. So I made canes and walking sticks for every employee in the burn unit, except for the girl that was scrubbing me every day. But I went back 3 months later and made her dad a cane. I mean, that's what Alcoholics Anonymous teaches us. We know when we're doing something that isn't right. So I knew it wasn't right, but I just didn't care. I just remember her scrubbing the dead skin off. It's 24, they do a 24-hour, 24/7, okay, when you're in the burn unit. So if I get shot or get stabbed or a car falls on me, I had a car fall on me in 87. No, 77. It's crushed my whole face. I'm real accident prone. And I drive a Harley now. Where was I? 24/7. Okay, so if I've got pneumonia and I go back to Vanderbilt, they put me in the burn unit. It's special care because of the burns. I overheat real easy. You got 280 sweat glands for every square inch of skin, so I burn over half of mine. So I have to be real careful. And I play racquetball. I'm sponsored by Prince Sports. I went from not walking to winning the state. I get all my rackets free. All my tournament fees paid. My rackets, my clothes, everything free. I'm blessed. If you look around the room, there's a lot of talented people here. We've had to be to survive this long. So, I play in a lot of racquetball tournaments. This year I haven't lived. I just signed a contract with Prince 3 months ago, and I haven't played in one tournament, so I got to start playing in tournaments. But if I'm out of town, the only time I'm not at the back room in my home group is if I'm out of town. That 24/7 deal, they sent me out to Tennessee Christian, where I went through treatment in 85 and 87. the koala unit. It was a lockdown unit. They sent me out there to recuperate because it was 24/7 out here. It's a lot of money to go back to Vanderbilt to have some more surgery. So while I was out there, I was able to go to the lockdown unit right off the bat to the AA meeting. And I got right back involved from the very beginning. I knew the white, you know, the BLW had that burning, the white light deal, and I had the burning couch, and I really did have the burning couch. I remember everything. I remember the smell, everything. But I remember everything about that, and I don't ever want to go back to that. I think that the more desperate you are when you get here, the better chances you have of long-term recovery. My daughter, by the way, just recently, she's in mending heart. She's got 10 months. And everything that happened to her, I told her was going to happen. It says that in our book. Everything that happened to her, I told her. And it all happened. DUI, flipped the car, lucky to be alive. You know, if you look at, I asked the guys at the jail out there, I said, how many of you guys, if I got, like last night, Kevin couldn't get in, but I had like 12 guys, okay? Sometimes I have more, but I'll ask them guys out there, how many of you swore the last time you were here you wasn't coming back to jail? And 85 to 90% of them would raise their hand. They get out doing the same thing, expecting different results, which is a description of insanity, I think. So, how much time? You know, I don't get into these, I have my own beliefs. You know, I think our own journeys is if Charlie and I have the same sponsor, but you know how I grew up, and Charlie had a loving family, we have the same sponsor who tells him the same thing, the same steps, that he told me, the exact same words.
I'm going to pick it up again.
My experience is going to be different because of my experiences, because of my childhood, because of my values are different than his. His worst thing he ever did will not be my worst thing. My worst thing for me was this, okay? I would never do that, but I wind up doing that, so... everybody's journey is a little bit different, okay? Nothing changes about, I think it's really important that nothing has changed in the big book. Same 12 steps, but our experiences are differently. And then if I take Charlie through the steps, and then Charlie takes somebody through the steps the way that I take somebody through the steps, and I do it the way Scott Lee does it, from the book. This is what changed my life. This is what created a psychic change. That's how I learned how not to fight. I like who I am. I never liked getting beat up. And most time in my case, because I handled myself for a good, it wasn't getting beat up. It was getting hurt really bad. You know, shot, stabbed, that kind of stuff. And that ain't fun. Waking up in the jail or the hospital, by God, I'm right, is not a good consolation prize. And I was never right to begin with, but I thought I was, you know. And so I'm real quick to admit when I'm wrong. Usually it's before I get home. and I know in my gut when a situation, there's always something new coming up at the halfway house, a situation that's never come up before. All I have to do nowadays is go with my gut. And treat it with integrity that I learned here. And I can get a job anywhere in Nashville at any treatment center, anytime. In the recovery field, it's like if you're an occupational therapist, in the occupational therapist field, people know stuff about other people in the field. I've got a great name in the fellowship in the field because of my integrity that I didn't have when I got here. So you guys taught me that. And my boss, she taught me that. So I've learned a lot about integrity. I learned a lot of, most of my character stuff I learned from you guys in a meeting. How many times do you go to a meeting when you see a newcomer that's hurting, and then somebody reaches a hand out to them, and then you see them, and they're leaving together, and they're both smiling? And I tell you guys, when I got here, I had a lot of problems with organized religion. My mother died when I was 15. I was angry at God. I didn't want to have anything to do with him. Tim Benson, who grew up three houses down from me, got to go to church on Sunday. He could afford the clothes. We couldn't. I never went to church. But I'd watch Tim and judge the church and what Tim done during the week. And that was my own immature, preconceived ideas. So when I got here, if you'd have told me I had to have your God, I wouldn't be here. So you told me I could have any God I wanted. So my God continues to grow. There was a guy at the Y yesterday, and I play racquetball every day. There was a guy at the Y yesterday, this morning, who was blind. And I see God all in that. I see him walk downtown sometimes by himself. That takes courage. So my God continues to grow. I see him in most everything I do. If you look for it, God's there. I just never paid attention to that stuff. I mean, hell, I never even paid attention to the seasons before I got here. This is true. I just didn't. I really try to be a better person. I like who I am today. I do esteemable things. You know, I'll leave money at the car wash or at the in Kroger at the checkout line. I'll drop pennies on heads, do shit like that. Stupid stuff, but I do that stuff. Little things like that I do that are really silly, but I like who I am because I do those kind of things, and I learned that here. So anyway, thanks for asking me to speak. I have 18 years on the 13th of October, so I'll be tickled to death to make another year. Thank you.
The Great Fact from Alcoholics Anonymous, page 164.
How are you?
I'm Stacy. I'm an alcoholic.
Stacey. Go Vols!
Go Vols! Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right. Great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless and keep you until then.
Thank you. We'll close in our traditional way.
Stretch out, drunks.
Sue, will you take us out?
This day, our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. keep coming back. It works if you work it.